Good afternoon, Maryland, D.C., Virginia, wherever you are tuned in. You are listening to Taking Action here on WPFW 89.3 FM in Washington, D.C. My name is Daniel Del Pielago, and as always, thank you so much for tuning in, for joining us, and for your ongoing support. I am honored this afternoon to have some representatives from, I'm getting the event and the organization we'll be talking about confused here. We're joined by folks with Family Values at Work who are going to do a great event coming up called Caring Out Loud. And we will unpack all of that in just a second, but I wanted to welcome them. I am joined by Laura Collins, Rhonda Wilson, and Jennifer Morales. I want to say thank you for taking the time to join us this afternoon. Welcome to the show.
Thanks for having us.
Thank you.
Wonderful. Well, you know, before we get started on the issues and all the stuff, I always like to ask my guests to introduce themselves and tell us a little bit about yourself, your professional, and whatever else you'd like to share. So please go right ahead.
Hi, I'm Laura Collins. I am the culture change manager with Family Values at Work. I do things like narrative tactic interventions, which is what the Caring Out Loud event is all about. So I'm excited to talk more about that later. I am from North Carolina, and I helped to organize this event that we're really excited to talk more about. And I will turn it over to Rhonda.
Yes. Hey, I am Rhonda Wilson, and I reside in Georgia, originally from Connecticut. Been in the Atlanta area last 15 years now. And I actually am an ops manager with a local nonprofit that provides technology to our local seniors. So I'm excited about this event, and I am one of the storytellers.
And I'm Jennifer Morales. I am from rural Wisconsin, and I am the director of movement learning and culture change for Family Values at Work, which is the team that's putting on the Caring Out Loud event on Friday.
Wonderful. Well, thank you all so much for joining me this afternoon. And as we got connected, because you guys are having an event coming up, as you mentioned, called Caring Out Loud, it'll be this September the 13th. So in just a couple of days at the MLK Library, it'll be from 6 to 8 p.m. But before that, as I understand it, you know, what's going to be talked about and of course, stories shared is about the caregiving crisis that exists in this country. Would you all care to unpack that a little for us? You know, what will folks, you know, what are the issues that folks will expect to hear?
Yeah, sure. So Family Values at Work has been an organization working for over 20 years to win economic justice policy issues. We're a 27-state network that is grounded with grassroots organizations in each of those states. And we've been working to pass universal paid family and medical leave and paid sick and safe days. And we've just started to really work on culture change efforts, and that's what this event is about. So, because we realize, you know, we've been working so long to pass something that should be as easy to get across, right? Especially after the pandemic, paid time off to care for yourselves and care for your loved ones, which every other industrial country offers, but we still do not. So we're starting to realize that, you know, the same tactics that we've been trying to use for, I mean, our org for over 20 years, but here in the United States, we've been trying to pass, you know, paid medical and family leave for over 100 years. We're going to need to change the culture. We're going to need to work on changing mindsets and, you know, replacing dominant narratives of American individualism, bootstrapping of, you know, it's your personal failing if you are unable to take care of your family and work and get all that done. We need to change those narratives into narratives of collective care, into narratives of, you know, we are all in this together. We all need to do what we need to do to help each other thrive. We live in an economy that requires us to, you know, work 2-3 jobs, you know, just to get by. And if we can't also care for ourselves and care for our families, there's just no way that we can all thrive individually, as communities, and as a nation. So we're trying to, you know, get folks just to talk about care, just to understand that everybody is a caregiver. If you ask people, you know, name some caregivers in my life, they're going to say most likely, my sister's a nurse, or, my doctor's a caregiver. They don't think of themselves. They don't think of the daily things that they do, that's giving and receiving care and even self-care. You know, they don't think about these things. So what we're trying to do with this event particularly is to get, you know, folks who are, you know, in the grassroots movement, folks who are, you know, working, they're actually working. Rhonda, she's a great advocate and volunteer with one of our network organizations in Georgia, 9 to 5 Georgia. And we're just trying to get these folks on in front of other people, in front of audience members, to form connections. You know, everybody has care stories. And if we share those stories, then, you know, audience members who may not necessarily think, you know, when they read like a 2-sentence synopsis of somebody's story, they may not necessarily connect with that. But when they hear like a 10-minute, the full version of someone's story, they're going to make a connection, and they're going to realize, oh, you know, my caregiving needs and those of my family are very unique. And there are things to take care of. But then when they hear, you know, their neighbor's story, and they say, oh, my neighbor also has unique caregiving needs. We have the caregiving is foundational to some of the issues that we're dealing with. So maybe we need to do something about that, right? So, and it's like these interventions, they're going to take, culture change takes like decades, really. So this is just like the first step towards working for however long we need to get folks to understand that we need these policies in place. And I'll let, I talked a lot. I'm gonna, Jennifer, did you hear anything in there, or Rhonda?
Well, yes, ditto to everything you said. Yeah, so, you know, we see our storytelling efforts, which are relatively new. We've only been working on this strategy for a couple of years. We see it as part of our organizing, part of our work as organizers for change. It's just a different approach than we've historically pursued, which has largely been in the policy arena and community organizing arena.
Mm-hmm. I actually stated before we came on to your session that to both Laura and Jennifer, you know, working with 9 to 5 as well, we're trying to piggyback from this event this Friday to create like a virtual one at the end of the month on the 25th. And I even mentioned that I noticed there's no problems in getting numbers. There's no problem in people wanting to get on to get more information. It's just, I've noticed either people are very apprehensive about speaking on the subject, or they don't understand. They think paid medical is a privilege. Mm-hmm. And as I say to other people, we're all going to get sick. That's something across the board. So taking care of yourself should not be a privilege. Mm-hmm. That's a requirement. So
thank you for underscoring that. You know, oftentimes, you know, myself as somebody who works and who has children and has to balance a lot of things, oftentimes, you know, we try to, you know, work through the sickness, or, you know, kind of say, you'll be okay, you know, and it is very difficult to balance because I think Laura mentioned it, you know, there's some long held narratives, beliefs, whatever you want to call them, that say, you know, show up to work. If you don't show up, you know, you're not doing it right. You know, I think what we've learned, especially, I think as Laura mentioned as well, from COVID, is we're going to get sick, and sometimes we're all going to get sick, you know, almost literally, right? A huge amount of people will get sick, and we need to make that time for care. So that's why I was really excited and interested to hear about your work and to share the event with our listeners here at WPFW, because we know it's important to them as well. Rhonda and Jennifer, if you wouldn't mind just kind of sharing you know, why is it important to you? You've talked a little bit about it, but, you know, personally, why is it so important for you, you know, to tell these stories and help others tell these stories at not only this upcoming event, but I would imagine, you know, in many other arenas and places.
Well, I'm going to talk about strategy for a minute because I can't stop being an organizer.
Go for it.
So strategically, you know, if I tell you some facts about a policy and like ask you to come to a rally and, you know, sign a petition, typical organizer's tactics, that gets you in the brain, right? But what we're doing when we're talking to each other about our experiences and telling personal stories is we're triggering other parts of our being. We're triggering the emotional, the social, we're developing empathy. And when you get that deep in someone's bones, then the cause becomes really real for them. It's not just, oh, I need to go to that rally because, you know, they're trying to get 200 people to show up. And if we don't have enough people, it's not going to look like a good movement. You know, they're going to be part of the movement because they get that they are a person who is trying to survive in our economy, in systems that are not designed for them to be able to thrive. So, you know, the care economy is failing all of us. No matter our situation, whether we're caring for young children, whether we're a person with disabilities who needs to give or receive care, whether we're caring for elder folks, it's not working for anybody. So we need people to recognize that their story takes place in this bigger constellation of systems that are failing. So that's what culture change work can do. That's what storytelling can do. So my story that I'll tell on Friday is about being the parent of adult children. My son became very, very sick, and I was 1,500 miles away. He and his brother live in Southern Florida. I live in Western Wisconsin. And just about how, you know, when we love people, caregiving never ends. We need to be there for them regardless. So, I can go into more details about my story, but that's why it's personal to me, is that, you know, I have a far-flung family that I care deeply about. I have a lot of chosen family. As a queer person, I depend a lot on chosen family among other LGBTQ folks to provide needs, and community. So, yeah, I definitely see myself in that web of mutuality that MLK talked about, for example, that, you know, we all can thrive if we're looking out for each other, but we don't thrive individually.
Mm-hmm. That's right.
As far as my story, I, as stated earlier, I come from the state of Connecticut, and as a child, I actually benefited from paid medical leave. My mother was a state worker, so moving to Atlanta, I did not understand why that subject was still brought up. I thought it was a moot point as an adult everywhere. And I learned in my story that a friend that was just, I mean, I used that term loosely at the time because I honestly didn't know her that well, who needed care. And her daughter was actually having issue trying to retrieve her mom because she was experiencing kind of workplace harassment, if you will. So it was just so many facets on that. And I just didn't understand. I'm like, you can't get your own mother? Like, your boss is threatening you? Like, I don't understand that mindset. So that's why when 9 to 5 came to me, and in family values, I was like, this is my chance to contribute and speak on it. Definitely.
Yeah, no, that's, thank you both for raising those important points. You know, here in the district, my organization, we do a lot of housing work, and this, the budget for this coming fiscal year is terrible on housing. Mm-hmm. And it is because there is so much stacked against us, right? Like, if you look at numbers and data and what the developers are doing, it's overwhelming. And I think, you know, legislators, people who make these decisions, can also become overwhelmed by that. And but they're just seeing numbers, right? And they're not hearing the stories. So it's easy to say, well, there's not much we can do about it. Let's just go with, you know, funding emergency rental assistance at a lower price because it's just a number to them, right? So sharing these stories is so important because there are, you know, faces and people and real experiences behind these numbers. And it helps to fight this invisibility that becomes, you know, so complacent where people are just like, hey, you know, we'll get them next time, right? And it's always some excuse to not deal with the real issues that are affecting real people with real lived experiences. So it's so, so important. Can you talk to us a little bit more about, let's unpack a little bit, paid family and medical leave, paid and safe sick days. Like, why are those so important, you know, for folks? And once again, I think somebody made the point earlier about folks almost not thinking that they're entitled to that. And, you know, we should all feel like we're entitled to these things.
Mm-hmm. Well, I just want to mention that, you know, nobody should feel bad if they didn't notice that they are a giver and receiver of care.
No. Yeah,
because our society works really hard at making that work invisible. Mm-hmm. And you think how much historically our whole economy has rested on the free labor of women in the home, of enslaved people, of low paid workers. Like, the whole economy is resting on care, and it's resting on people who have been very poorly treated and made invisible. So if you don't see yourself right away as someone who gives and receives care, that's by design, mm-hmm. right? So, you know, we're telling these stories about care as a way to start putting faces on it and helping people recognize themselves in those stories. So paid family and medical leave is longer term leave. Ideally, it's a what we would call a social insurance program. So something that we all share in common that's administered by a public entity, like a government agency. And it allows people to take time to care for themselves and for loved ones for a longer period of time, weeks or months. Paid sick and safe days are days that are used for short-term illnesses, sometimes for, you know, acute situations where you have to go to the doctor for various appointments. Safe days are used to deal with the effects of domestic violence or sexual assault or stalking. So many municipalities and now a few states have sick and safe days as a combination. So you don't have to reveal exactly why you're using a few days of time off from work, but you have them. So those are for shorter, more acute situations. We also work on childcare as a key care issue as well. Those are important because life is unpredictable. You know, we're human beings. We're soft and squishy. We get into a lot of dangerous situations in our lives. We get sick. Other people in our lives get sick, and it's not predictable. You know, we have our whole day, week, month planned out, and it can suddenly be derailed when a relative gets sick. So, you know, we need to have these policies guaranteed to everybody, regardless of who they work for, how big their employer is, where they live, so that they can meet those needs when they come up unexpectedly.
That's right. I'm speaking as somebody that's 51 years young, as unpredictable as life can be, it's also very predictable, right? Like, I've got children to care for. I know I'm going to need time. I've got aging parents that I need to take care of. I know that's going to take some time. My partner, my wife, you know, we have doctor's appointments and all those things. So yeah, I think once again, pushing the culture to know and realize that, yes, we need this and we're entitled to this is so important. I want to make sure that we plug the event and let folks know it's a free event. I don't know, one of you or if you want to talk a little bit about the event, you know, give us the details and how folks can join.
Yeah, sure. I'd love to. We have a registration link. We'd love for you to register. But if you don't register, that's fine. Just come on down to the library. Doors will open on Friday, September 13th at 6 p.m. We'll be on the fifth floor. We have the whole floor. We have a rooftop terrace. It's gorgeous. I'm sure most of your listeners have been to the MLK Museum.
Library.
And the library. Sorry. Yes. That too. But yeah, we have seven storytellers who are going to share their journeys and care. And it's just one of their care stories, right? Because we all contain a multitude of care stories as well. And we're going to have some refreshments, and we're going to have an art installation that folks can interact with too. It involves beautiful life-size mailboxes with postcards. People can write their care stories and send it out into the world. And then, there's going to be some surprises too. I don't want to give away too much, but so please come on down to the MLK Library. The doors will open at 6:00. And again, get some refreshments, meet the storytellers, meet some fellow activists who are working on these economic justice issues. It'll be a really great place to talk with people and feel empowered. Like, some of the stories are really, tough. Some are uplifting. But you're going to identify with all of them, most of them, right? So even if you don't have a direct experience, there's just elements of everyone's stories that are just so relatable. So you'll walk away, I think, feeling, even though the stories are some are tough, you're going to feel joyful and empowered and hopefully ready to share your own story.
That's right. And your website, if I'm not mistaken, is familyvaluesatwork.org.
Yes.
It's spelled out A-T. And right, as I see it, when you get to the landing page is the information and how to register for the event. So please, folks, if you are interested, if any of this is resonating with you, make sure to go out. It sounds like it's going to be a great event. If you haven't been out to the MLK Library yet, go out for that, because, that's a fancy space up there. It's really cool. We've done a couple of events, and just to be able to hang out on that terrace is worth it. So, please make sure to join and support this important work. Let me ask you all to talk just a little bit more about this culture change, because it's something that is so important, definitely for this issue that we're speaking on, but in general, for all of our organizing work, for all of our social justice work, it is important. That's what we try to do. We're not just trying to change laws, because we know how that works. We need to change culture. So talk to us a little bit more about that.
Yeah. So I like to talk about culture change in three different categories. There's, kind of like journalistic, kind of nonfiction, mass media culture change. And there's also culture change that's more like mass culture, where it's like, working with writers in writers' rooms for TV shows to try to get care stories, or like, whatever your subject is, climate change stories. Try to get those into, major television shows, movies. And then there's mass movement culture change. And that's where Family Values is working right now. We're working, with grassroots organizations in our states to just try to, do things like narrative landscaping in their communities. Like, what narratives are in your community that are harmful and working against your state being able to pass, paid sick and safe days for even teachers, right? So, what do you need to do to change those narratives into ones that will work for you, right? That will be beneficial to passing the policies that you need. There's theater. There's theater interventions that can be done that's culture change. There's poems. Poetry can be a narrative tactic for culture change.
Murals
can be a narrative tactic for culture change. It's also a lot of, cultural organizing too, trying to work with artists to do things like murals in your community, or art that's really striking and really, makes people understand the issues more. It's getting together with people in your community and making a podcast. That's culture change too. What you're doing, Daniel, is culture change, getting the word out about things and bringing people together to think more about these issues that are keeping us in constant crisis, right? Housing, climate, economic justice. Anyone want to add anything about what culture change is to them, or
That's definitely, those are great points about cultural change. Me personally, I experienced culture change through like visual installations, artwork, and definitely more conversational. So I really think, events like this, and then the one we're doing with 9 to 5, what we call Wellness Woman Wednesdays, to invite women in the community, well, really throughout it, Georgia, to join in, share their experiences, and also to kind of lend next steps, because, people have these experiences and these stories and things that happen, but it just stays like that. Like, people don't know what else they can do, or they do the whole, well, it's a cool story, and just leave it like that. So, just so they know that, yeah, you can relate to this situation, you can relate to this art, but just know, like, you can do something. You can talk to your neighbors, you can join an organization, make sure you're registered to vote. I also work with my local Cobb County Elections Office as well, too. I was there 2016 and again in 2020. That was interesting, to say the least. So that gave me a lot more insight to the mindset and just seeing the differences from state to state as well. So I feel like things like this are getting people like, it's okay to talk, it's okay to open your mouth, and voice what you're experiencing and what your community or what your family needs.
Yeah, we definitely see it in this arc of engagement. Like we need culture change interventions that help people recognize that they're in a system of care that is not working for most of us, and for them to help, to start to identify as givers and receivers of care, and then help them, share their own story in some way and get engaged in the movement and begin to see themselves as part of the answer. So I think that's what Rhonda's pointing toward is like you can bring somebody in with a powerful art installation, but then moving them into seeing themselves as an activist who has a role to play is the next phase. I can give an example of something Family Values at Work has done. Before we really got serious about culture change per se, we were the co-convener of a national network called the Family Justice Network. And we started in 2014, realizing that a lot of types of families were not included in existing paid family and medical leave and paid sick and safe days programs. So the definition of family in those policies was too narrow for a lot of people to even take advantage of them. So you might have a pretty good paid family and medical leave policy in your state that theoretically you have access to, but if you are caregiving for somebody who is not related in these very narrow ways, like by blood or marriage, then you might not actually qualify for paid leave to take care of them. So we saw a lot of this, for example, during the height of the COVID pandemic when people were having to rely on people who were nearby rather than perhaps far-flung relatives. You might be caregiving for a neighbor whose blood relatives were not able to actually show up because of travel restrictions, for example. So, a lot of our laws cut that out. So the Family Justice Network has worked for 10 years to make sure that it became the default in legislators' minds when they start writing paid leave laws or paid sick days laws to include many types of family relationships, including what we call by affinity relationships. So, your chosen family, your friends, your neighbors, foster children, like people you don't maybe have a legal relationship to, but still are family, and you need time off to care for them. So we have been successful in moving that definition, in changing how people think about what family is, through organizing, through social media campaigns, video campaigns. You know, we've been telling stories about what it actually means to be family and how many different ways families manifest in our society. So we shifted culture and it took 10 years. So we know that these things are uphill battles. And our crowning achievement to date is that when the pandemic hit and Congress moved to pass temporary legislation for paid sick days and paid family and medical leave, they included our definition of family, a broad definition of family that includes chosen family, without even us pushing them. So we're like, yay, we achieved some critical understanding of what family is.
Yeah, I know.
And that reminds me too, with culture change, you need to constantly be working on culture change in order to make the policies that we do win sticky and they'll stay. With this rising, you know, the fascism that's kind of, you know, happening all around us, they're trying to define family with just, you know, a husband and a wife and two children. And so the work is never really done because we could always slide backwards. So you'd always be, you know, aware and working towards engaging with folks, sharing stories and making sure that, you know, we all, you know, understand that we're in a community together and, you know, remind each other what we need to thrive and be healthy.
Yeah, no, you know, as Rhonda was talking, something really struck me as somebody who's tried to do organizing now for many years. You know, one of the key things that we do as organizers is do these one-on-ones, right? That's the key thing. You learn, you know, organizing 101. You go do the one-on-one, you meet the person, you talk to them. And, you know, the culture not only has to change with, you know, our opponents, you know, but internally too, because a one-on-one sounds real business-like now that I'm reflecting on it, right? And it really is sharing stories, right? What you want to learn is, who is this person? What moves them? How can we try to help to shave that proverbial dust, you know, that covers folks with oppression and stuff and isms? So yeah, just the importance of really, you know, being clear that, you know, these stories are powerful. People's stories are powerful and they need to be shared. And sometimes, you know, putting them in this little one-to-one, one-on-one box, you know, we should at least be aware as organizers that really it is about stories and sharing stories and telling stories and having folks feel comfortable in sharing those stories because they mean a lot. And, you know, it helps us to gauge, like, well, this is a leader, right? This is a leader. This is somebody we need to invest in and support and make sure that they are sharing these stories and then helping others share those stories as well. So thank you. This conversation is really a great. Folks, you are tuned into Taking Action here on WPFW 89.3 FM in Washington, D.C. We are speaking with Laura Collins, Rhonda Wilson, and Jennifer Morales. They will all be part of an event taking place this coming Friday, the 13th, from 6 to 8 p.m. at the MLK Library. It's Caring Out Loud. It's true stories about caregiving. You've been hearing about the importance of this work to move forward, things like, you know, paid leave and the things, but also the importance of changing the culture to have folks understand how important this is and how we all are entitled to receiving and being able to give care. If you are moved to give us a call, to share a story, to ask a question about the event or the work in general, please give us a call at 202-588-0893. Once again, that's 202-588-0893. We'd love to hear some stories out there of folks around this issue. One thing that's been on my mind, and I think it's always important to talk to, and of course, I think this could be a whole other show, but you know, who is the opposition? And I think it's good to articulate that to somehow, right? And then I think we all have an idea, right? It's big business. It's folks trying to make money, as much money as they can. But talk to us a little bit, like, who is out there saying, nah, folks shouldn't have paid leave. You know, folks should work and be as sick as they can while doing it.
Oh, yeah.
So first of all, I just want to say, these policies are wildly popular.
That's right.
Regardless of your geography, your political party, your religious belief, it's across the board in the 70s or 80s percent approval of things like paid family and medical leave. So the people want it. You will not find another issue that hits 80% approval in the United States. Everybody knows how divided we feel right now. This is something that crosses all boundaries. That said, yes, big business has been a huge opponent. So, for example, some of the people who are most affected by the lack of paid sick days are healthcare workers and restaurant workers and other like public-facing service workers. So big lobbies like the National Restaurant Association, the big retailer associations that are like Target and Walmart, those lobbies are hugely against this because they rely on those workers showing up, whether they're sick or, you know, or, you know, in desperate need of care for their diabetes or whatever, like they just will work people to the bone. So they want to make sure that there are no mandates, as they would say, on how they can use their workers. And they will say things like, oh, but we offer paid sick days, but the devil's in the details because, for example, a lot of major retailers will have their sales associates not be able to claim pay for their time off until maybe the third day. So you have to be sick for 3 whole days before you can qualify for the money, or you need to get a doctor's note or some other bureaucratic barrier that keeps people from actually accessing. So they just show up anyway. They could be horribly sick and they'll just show up to their work. So yes, those are definitely our opponents. I don't know, Laura, if you have other opponents you want to name.
Well, I will add to the, you know, all the, like this, like the service workers, the ones who need it like so badly. They're what we called essential workers during the pandemic. Mm-hmm. And that really gets my goat because when we needed them most, they were referred to as essential workers. And now I guess we don't need them. I mean, now they're just back to being unskilled workers, which just that's incredibly awful. Like, it just makes me so angry. So I use that anger and I turn it into culture change tactics. So, but yeah, I mean, you have like, I don't know, like the Chamber of Commerce. They don't like us. The National Retail Association, they don't like us. But I will say it's also angering me. It angers me when like a national hotel chain gives their higher ups access to paid family leave, but that doesn't trickle down to, you know, the folks working hard in the hotels. I mean, I just use hotel as a example, but you know, there's all kinds of industries that are like that, where they give the higher ups all of these great, great things. And then, you know, they don't offer that to the workers who are working shift workers. Right. So it's just so galling.
And I will say too, that, you know, again, the devil is in the details when it comes to, so, you know, some Congress people, for example, who oppose a national paid family and medical leave program will say, oh, this is so popular, I better come up with something. Mm-hmm. And so they come up with a plan that actually harms working people, but it has the name paid leave on top of it. So, for example, there's been a recurring proposal that fortunately has not passed that would offer paid leave, but you would have to borrow from your Social Security, your future Social Security withdrawal, to say, for example, take 3 months off after giving birth. And we know that that will harm particularly women, because women generally have lower Social Security earnings over their lifetime. For various reasons, but would be most in need as the primary caregivers in most households still, of drawing on that Social Security funded paid family and medical leave program multiple times throughout their life. So then they get to the age of retirement and they're you know, small, already small Social Security savings is reduced even further. So, you know, is that paid leave? I'm paying for it myself is what it looks like, right? That's not paid leave that we can thrive with. So, you know, it's really important for us to look at the details when people recognize that, wow, this is so popular, I better come up with some kind of plan. Mm-hmm. Some plans are not actually going to help us.
Right. And the good thing too about paid family and medical leave, it's not just parental leave. Like, do we need parental leave in this country? Yes, but it needs to be part of a paid family and medical leave policy that covers any care needs, right? Because Daniel, you mentioned earlier that you also have caregiving needs that you take care of for your parents, and you're also doing it for your kids. And that's called, you know, the sandwich generation. So you're in the sandwich generation where you have caregiving for your older parents and then your children. And, you know, parental leave is like good for one instance in your life, but you're going to have so many instances in your life as you go forward that you're going to need to have paid time off so that you don't have to worry about, you know, getting your mortgage payment or your rent payment. Are you going to have a home because you got cancer, right? That's like a terrible, terrible choice that we're forcing on people.
Yeah.
And that we can make different choices. Our legislators can make different choices. So we have to change the culture and push them to make better choices.
Yeah, no, it you know, I mentioned we do primarily housing work, or at least I do. We've got one caller, and caller will just get right to you. You know, the point I was trying to make is that, you know, oftentimes we hear, I had to take a couple of days off because my child was sick, my mom was sick, and I lost my job, and now I can't pay my rent. Now I'm going to be evicted. So, you know, that's the ripple effect, the domino effect, that not having, you know, access to being able to care for yourself and for others, you know, that's what leads to a lot of the issues that you know, hurt our folks so much. Caller, thank you so much for calling in. Why don't you give us your name and give us your question or comment?
Yes, my name is Maria Bradley, and my comment is that the lady who's speaking, she's dancing around some of the issues. The issue is the lack of education and dividing the people who are not able to afford decent care. The professionals, like myself, a retired educator, I have good insurance, but it's a game between the have and the have-nots. And those people who are on the lower economic end of the ladder, they are misused and abused by the system. And I feel that there should be universal care for everyone. Mm-hmm. And it's sad that is put into certain components. Well, if you have a PhD and you're in a professional job, you can get the best self-care.
Mm-hmm.
But if you're in another job, a labor job, which is a job and not a career, and just a job, and you cannot get the necessary things that you need in order to go forth with a family. As an educator, many of the people I work with in D.C. public schools, they were not able to take off to see about their children because guess what? I can't afford to lose a day's work.
Mm-hmm.
And so, therefore, they are categorized as parents who don't care about the children. Mm-hmm. No, that's not it. They are parents who are trying to, single parents who are trying to take care of a household and do not want the necessary stress of saying, if I don't show up for work, I have no job. That's all I have to say.
Thank you, Ms. Bradley. We appreciate your call and the point that you made. I agree. You know, it should be for everybody. And I think that's what the discussion is that everybody deserves it. Of course, there are folks that definitely feel it a whole lot more. I don't, Laura, anybody else, any response to the caller?
No, yeah, I full-throatedly agree with that. Yeah, we're pushing for universal. We're pushing for gig workers to have access to paid family and medical leave and paid sick and safe days.
Self-employed people.
Self-employed people. Everybody. Yeah. Everybody. Human beings care for each other and care for themselves. It's a human right. And that's what we're pushing for. Agreed.
Yeah. And, you know, to go back to the details issue, like often we see proposals that will provide paid sick days or paid family and medical leave, but they'll cut out whole sectors of people. So, for example, agricultural workers are a group that often is left out of policies. And those folks work really hard every day, you know, growing our food, harvesting our food, doing dangerous work with pesticides. And they often are cut out of any kind of paid leave. So, you know, we do need to make sure, and Family Values at Work is a hard line on this, that we need to make sure everybody possible is covered in every policy that gets passed.
That's right. No, thank you. And thanks again, Ms. Bradley, for your call. We do appreciate that. As we begin to wrap up, I want to make sure that we let folks know the details about the event, you know, before we wrap up here. So if you'd let us once again, just repeat those details so folks can make sure to join in.
Yeah. So we're going to be at the Martin Luther King Jr. Memorial Public Library on Friday the 13th. That's this Friday. Doors open at 6 and we'll be there until about 8. We're going to have refreshments. So it's free event, free refreshments. We'll have some giveaways and we'll just sit back and enjoy some really impactful stories.
And Laura, in general, if folks, you know, beyond the event that's coming, if folks, you know, have been activated by our discussion today and want to join in some of the work, how can they plug into some deeper work?
Yeah, well, we have an email. It's kind of long, but I think it's easy to remember. It's caringoutloud@familyvaluesatwork.org. So please, if you have a story you want to share, or you want to learn more information about our culture change work, you want to see how you can plug in. You know, we also have network organizations in this area, in DC, in Maryland. So we can also plug you in with some of our network organizations around here too, doing some really great work, especially, you know, with locally. And go to familyvaluesatwork.org/caringoutloud. And yeah, just reach out, please. I love to hear from people.
Yeah. And I just want to shout out our four main partners, in the DMV. So we've got Many Languages, One Voice, MLOV. We've got Jews United for Justice, Jobs with Justice, and United Workers. Those are the organizations that we work closely with on issues of paid leave and care. So
Jobs Task Force.
Oh, Job Opportunities Task Force. There we go. Sorry, didn't mean to leave you out. So, you know, there's a number of local organizations that people can get connected to too, if they're interested in these issues. Otherwise, sign up on our email list on our website at familyvaluesatwork.org.
Thank you. No, it's important.
Rhonda? And I'm just excited to be a part of the event because I don't really do advocacy. So this has been a great experience so far. So I encourage those to get involved if they want to.
I'm going
to
push back. Rhonda definitely does advocacy. Rhonda, you're an organizer.
Not as in, well, now, but in the past, I've never been this involved.
Uh-huh. But we hear your point.
Yes.
Come hear stories. Even if you don't see yourself as an activist,
yes,
just come hear the stories.
Yeah.
It's time to step in to, you know, who you can be, right? And in some cases, who you're meant to be. You know, you sometimes life is like that, right? Something will hear something, and you know, it really activates us to really join in some meaningful work. Well, I just want to once again say thank you all so much for you know, joining us on the air this afternoon, for you know, hosting the event this coming Friday that I hope many folks in the listening audience will join and tell others about, especially, you know, well, we're all caregivers. Let's make sure to make that point. And care receivers. But, you know, if you know somebody that definitely would enjoy that, please make sure to share the details. And we'll do it just a quick one last time before we go. But any closing statements before we go?
I would love to see folks come on out and introduce yourself if you do make it. Yeah, and just like, you know, share your stories, talk to your neighbors, talk to your family members about care issues and instances in which you, you know, would have loved to have had the opportunity to, you know, I don't know, whatever you want would want to do, if you just only had access to paid time off, and share your stories and really come together, and we can really move our leaders. We have the power. The power is with the numbers of the people, and we can do this. We can make the change.
Okay. Yeah, I second that. People need to kind of understand that they do have the power, and, you know, I encourage people to come definitely listen and check out the event, check out Family Values at Work.
And I just say, as a note of hope, that we have over the past 20 years won policies that have benefited 65 million workers and their families across the country. That might be a paid sick days law, that might be a paid family medical leave state program. We are winning this thing. It's mm-hmm. been slow work, but we're winning this thing, and we invite you to be part of it.
That's right. No, I think thank you for that, because I think it's important to realize that this is a part of a bigger movement, right? Like we're movement people, and this definitely helps to inform, shape, and move us forward and get those wins that are necessary for our folks, so they can have a decent, not only decent, but a quality life.
Right, because all of our issues are connected. Like you said, housing is connected to the lack of paid leave, right? Because people will lose their homes if they can't work. So they're all connected.
That's right. And just once again, folks, the event is this coming Friday, the 13th at 6 p.m. The doors open at 6 p.m. It'll run till about 8 p.m. It's at the MLK Library. That's right next to the Gallery Place. Yes. Metro Station. It's literally right across the street from the Metro Station. So if you can get on the Metro, you can get to this event. So please make sure to join. Once again, the website, if you'd like to register, although Laura told us just come on down, you know, don't necessarily need to register, but it would be helpful for them to know. The website is familyvaluesatwork.org. As soon as you get there, you will see a link for the event and how to register. And once again, thank you all so much for your good work, for your time this afternoon, and wishing you all the best for a successful event on Friday.
Thank you, Daniel.
Thank you.
Appreciate you.
Appreciate y'all. Okay, have a great day. Bye. Folks, stay tuned. You've got Capitalism, Race, and Democracy in just a couple of minutes. But before that, we'll have the news for you. Thank you so much for tuning in. We will catch you next Tuesday. Peace, everyone.
That time again, join WPFW as we move to get fit at the annual 5K run walk for total fitness. Dynamic fitness instructors will be there, free healthy snacks and water, exciting music, boat rides for families, and a double dutch contest and a hand dance contest are all included in the 5K fundraiser. This event takes place at the Bladensburg Waterfront Park, 4601 Annapolis Road in Bladensburg, Maryland, from 1 p.m. to 7 p.m. on Saturday, September 14th. Now, for more details on how to register, visit our website, wpfw.org, or call 202-888-5484. That's 202-888-5484. Meet you at the park on Saturday, September 14th, 1 p.m. to 7 p.m. WPFW, making a better world, one broadcast at a time.
For WPFW News in Washington,
and WBAI in New York, I'm Sue Goodwin. Today is Tuesday, September 10th. Here are some headlines. Jury selection entered day two today in the federal trial of three former Memphis police officers charged with federal civil rights violations in the death of Tyree Nichols. Nichols was stopped for an alleged traffic violation in January 2023. After being pulled from his car, Nichols was brutally beaten in an assault that was caught on video and later released to the public. The video also showed the officers milling around and talking with each other as Nichols sat on the ground, struggling with his injuries. Nichols died from his injuries 3 days after the attack. His death sparked national outrage as demonstrators across the country called for a prompt investigation and denounced police brutality. The three police officers have pleaded not guilty to depriving Nichols of his rights through excessive force, failing to intervene, and obstructing justice through witness tampering. The trial is expected to last 3 to 4 weeks. In other news, Louisiana is under a hurricane warning with mandatory evacuations ordered along the Gulf Coast as Tropical Storm Francine approaches, with landfall predicted tomorrow as a Category 2 hurricane. In its latest advisory, the National Hurricane Center warned of life-threatening storm surge for portions of the Upper Texas and Louisiana coastlines and of damaging and life-threatening hurricane-force winds in portions of southern Louisiana. Government offices and public buildings are announcing closures, and some Louisiana communities have already begun to close their floodgates in anticipation of the storm's landfall. In international news, over 140 Ukrainian drones targeted several Russian regions overnight, killing one person and injuring three, Russian officials reported today. It marks one of Ukraine's biggest drone attacks on Russia since the war began. Russian state media reported that the strikes shut down 4 airports in Moscow and more than 30 domestic and international flights that serve the Russian capital were suspended. Russian officials condemned the attack, which they portrayed as evidence that Putin was right to invade Ukraine. The United Nations says Russia has killed at least 11,000 civilians in Ukraine and said the true number was likely to be higher. And former President Donald Trump and Vice President Kamala Harris will face off tonight in Philadelphia in their first presidential debate, as polling shows the race for the White House remains tight with no clear leader. The U.S. economy will likely be a major focus. In poll after poll, Americans have indicated the economy is their top concern as they prepare to cast their votes in November. Trump is expected to convince viewers that Harris is responsible for a lot of the inflation that people are unhappy about, while Harris will likely portray Trump as someone who cuts taxes for the wealthy but doesn't do much for the middle class. Last week, both Harris and Trump unveiled proposals of how they would address the economy if elected. Trump's plan continues to push for lowering government spending, easing regulation of companies, and cutting corporate taxes. Meanwhile, Harris is talking about raising taxes for the wealthy and big corporations, expanding the child